One of our favorites, Brian Windhorst, ESPN, and author of LeBron Inc., The Making of a Billion-Dollar Athlete, available this month. Brian, thanks for doing this.
No problem, guys. Boy, the Raptors are looking good, man.
Yeah.
They're really, really looking good.
They are, and yeah, you've been effusive in your praise of them.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, it doesn't normally happen this way. You don't normally see something in the preseason that matters, but I went to a preseason game this year down in New Orleans, and I guarantee that Raptors fans don't remember it because they had played in Montreal the night before, and they didn't play any of their main guys. Kawhi sat, Danny Green sat, Kyle sat, and basically Serge sat. And I don't think it was even on TV in Canada. They didn't even bring a TV crew because it was such a tough back-to-back. But the Pelicans played their entire front line. Their entire starters played, including Anthony Davis. There was maybe 1,500 people in the stands. And Pascal Siakam, a guy who I've watched play dozens of times over the last couple of years, a guy I watched fade into the wallpaper in playoff games, took that game by the throat and embarrassed the Pelicans, went right at Anthony Davis. My jaw dropped open. I was looking around to see if anybody was noticing this guy who came out of nowhere, and I was blown away by how good he looked that night. And he, I'll be damned, he just kept playing that way. And I've been in love with him ever since that day. Now the whole world knows. Now he's arrived. It's happened. But I don't know if I've ever seen a player make a leap like this from year to year. Sometimes you can see it coming. I mean, there would be 6-7 minute periods where the guy would not touch the ball for more than a split second. And now he's an offensive creator. I mean, he has got my vote by a mile for most improved. And that's usually one of the toughest categories to come up with.
Well, that's the thing too, is he's not just most improved. Like, oh yeah, he's putting together a halfway decent season. Like, he probably should have made the All-Star team this year. And I wonder if you were looking around the league. I know Bill Simmons loves to do the trade value rankings or how valuable someone is around the league. Where would you kind of put him? Like, where do you slot Pascal Siakam at this point?
If I was the Pelicans, I would call on an Anthony Davis trade.
Wow,
I would call and ask for, you know, Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam. We could talk about other pieces, you know, OG Anunoby. I mean, I'm not saying it makes sense for the Raptors, but that's where I think of him.
Wow, so like he would be the centerpiece of a deal and better than anything the Celtics could offer, you think?
Well, you know, this is a very long conversation because the difficulty with Anthony Davis is that he's not going to commit to any team he gets traded to. So if you're a team like the Raptors or the Celtics and you lose Kyrie Irving and or Kawhi Leonard, it changes your interest level in making a trade like that. So, you know, you can't have the conversation just in a vacuum. But let's say that, you know, if I were the Pelicans, you know, a guy like Jason Tatum and a guy like Pascal Siakam will be guys I'd be trying to get for Anthony Davis.
Yeah, it's wild because when those trade rumors first surfaced and Siakam was still having an incredible season, I think even then, I thought it was crazy talk that people wouldn't put Pascal Siakam in a deal for Anthony Davis or that he was some type of an untouchable player. I was like, this is all about ceiling. This league is about ceiling and about superstars. If you can go get him, yeah, you move off an asset like that. But yeah, looking at that 1 year of Davis and seeing what that's worth, I don't think that it is worth a Siakam, and I really didn't think we were ever going to get to this point. And when it comes to Kawhi Leonard, we have been discussing lately how one of the most important things about this season is that he kind of represents a future Kawhi Leonard can see with some certainty, right? Is that he's not as old as Kyle Lowry or Serge Ibaka or Marc Gasol, that maybe there's a possibility that Kawhi looks at Pascal Siakam and says, well, there's not someone I can join that's going to be much better right away. Do you think that this play may have impacted the decision for Kawhi Leonard?
It's hard to know. It's, you know, you could ask really good, well-rounded, thoughtful Kawhi questions for the next hour. And I'm not going to have answers. I don't know how the man feels. I just don't know. I mean, look, there are a lot of people in this league right now who devote a lot of time to try to figure out what's in his head. And I will say this, he's been very effusive about how the Raptors have handled him with terms of rest. And I think one thing you can tell that the Raptors decided, they decide if we're going to lose Kawhi Leonard, it's not going to be because we overplayed him or we were not sensitive to his health, which I think was a major factor in alienating him in San Antonio. And so they have had a plan and they followed it. They've added to the team throughout the season. And here we are, April, the playoffs are days away and they are playing some of their best basketball. And that is a credit to Masai. That is a credit to Nick Nurse. That is a credit to the team to get ready. Will it be enough? I mean, your guess is as good as mine. I will say this. If Kawhi Leonard decides to leave, it does not mean the end of Raptors basketball. Pascal Siakam is a pillar which to build around. He is not as good as Kawhi, but he is a pillar which to build around. That if Kawhi leaves, you can go forward with him. And it's now time for him to sign an extension, and you can lock him up at the end of this year. And I think no matter what happens with Kawhi, I think if you're a Raptors fan, you have to feel good about where the team is.
What makes Kawhi Leonard so different when it comes to trying to find out what his intentions are or getting any perspective as to what even interests him when looking at his future?
One, he is incredibly close to the vest with everything. Good luck finding out how his day is going. Two, he has a very small, close, tight circle. So information about his thoughts and feelings does not get out, and it's within a family. So that even makes it more insular. Three, he's made unpredictable decisions in the past, leaving the San Antonio Spurs and a Supermax offer that would have netted him $80 million more than he can sign for this summer. Four, he is already established as a player. Not only does he already have a ring, he already has a finals MVP. He doesn't have to go anywhere to prove anything to anybody. You put all that together with just the general nature of how fragile the NBA is, where things day-to-day change and certainly month-to-month, you have the recipe of an unpredictable situation.
You mentioned Pascal Siakam and an extension maybe forthcoming. Where is he at in your mind? Are we talking about a max player here?
If he doesn't, I mean, look, I can't speak for what the Raptors feel. If I was his agent, I would not sign anything less than that.
Well, yeah, it's a shame that nobody really has any insight on the Kawhi thing. And you were the guy that first brought it to our attention how serious him coming to the Raptors was in the offseason. And really, it was even tough for us to believe it at the time, and it ended up happening. It's funny, we talk about people in this building not paying attention to that at the moment. Do you feel like you got enough credit for being on the forefront of the Kawhi to the Raptors thing?
I don't care about any of that. What I would say is that occasionally you have situations in the NBA where you have like super duper star players, but because of the nature of the scenario or whatever, their market gets very, very small. And I'll just compare this to James Harden. You know, James Harden trade. At the end of the day, they just didn't have that many offers. They just didn't have that many options for him at the time. And so, you know, they've been ripped for that for years, but that was their best offer. Paul George, same thing. Because of his free agency status, because of just the nature of everything, because people thought he was going to go to L.A., you know, it ended up being a really good trade, but the Pacers just didn't have much. And that's happened to Kawhi, too. This was a guy who was a rental, and he was not willing to extend. And as a result, the suitors just dried up. And, you know, after a while, you start looking at the lay of the land, and it was clear. The only team negotiating was the Raptors. And if you look at it, if you look at what the Raptors gave up, I mean, you know, DeRozan is a great player, but certainly they're thrilled. It was even if Kawhi walks this year, it was a terrific trade. And they have a wonderful opportunity to reach the finals. And if they continue to play this way, I think they've got a really good chance.
Do you think if the Raptors, and I know this is kind of far in the future, but if Kawhi was to walk, that it would create a situation where Masai Ujiri started to try to reshape the roster and move out from the likes of Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka?
Well, I don't know. I think that's obviously something behind closed doors that he and Bobby Webster and Wayne Embry and the other decision makers, I'm sure, have had this discussion. You know, one of the most important things you do as a front office is strategic planning. And, you know, what do you do if this or if that? And I'm sure this has been a big discussion. You know, Kyle is slowed down a little bit this year. But at the same time, I feel like he's played a terrific role, and they've done a really good job of protecting him. Serge has had, you know, with some changes to the structure of the way the team operates and everything, Serge has sort of been, you know, re-energized. I think it potentially would be a mistake to give up on it immediately, but there's no question that they would have to take a step back and retrofit a little bit. But, you know, the funny thing is that Masai, a couple of different times, has had a rebuild on the stove and was planning on doing it. You know, the Rudy Gay trade, followed by what was supposed to be a Kyle Lowry trade, was supposed to do it. Mm-hmm. And they ended up working. And so, you know, Masai has never really had to do the rebuild. And I think that he'd be kind of in the same situation here. I think he'd look at what he has and says, why wouldn't we run it back? Especially since Kyle and Serge's contracts are shorter. You know, you're not locked in long term. So if you had to change gears, you wouldn't have to work too hard to do so.
Well, what do you think the bigger Knicks mistake was? Trading a first for Andrea Bargnani or refusing to trade a first for Kyle Lowry?
You know what the mistake was? The mistake was worrying about the last trade for the next trade.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know this is something you would tell a second grader learning basketball. The most important play in basketball is the next play. And, you know, you can't look back. Really, in any pro sport, when you're making decisions, you have to look forward. And the scar tissue from the Bargnani trade affected the way that they went about the Lowry thing. And still, people who were with the Knicks at that time are what if from here to the end of the day, because they feel like had they gotten Lowry, then it would have a completely different scenario for the Knicks. And, you know, they swore to Jim Dolan that this was going to be great for them. But I think it's really a management lesson more than anything about not letting a past mistake affect, you know, keep you from making a future mistake.
Yeah, it's an ownership problem there. It seems like pretty clearly. But, yeah, they're scared of Masai, and understandably so. The book, again, is LeBron Inc., The Making of a Billion-Dollar Athlete. So LeBron, he's been shut down for the season, but he still seems pretty confident he's gonna be able to lure someone there in the off season, whether that's a free agent or make the trade work there. How confident are you in what he's confident in?
Not very. It's, you know, LeBron's past has been very mixed in terms of recruiting. You know, he was able to get Kevin Love to come to Cleveland. That was a huge, you know, move. I mean, they really didn't even know each other that well, and he was able to close that deal. He's been able to close, you know, deals with, you know, really important role players, like talking Ray Allen into coming to Miami and things of that nature. But he's not been able to do it recently. And, you know, his inability to get Paul George to come with him to L.A., I mean, that was a real stunning moment. And right now, the Lakers – The viewpoint of the Lakers is a little bit down right now. And then the other complication is that the top free agents in this class, the guys who could really make a difference, because, you know, if they landed Kemba Walker, for example, I think they would elevate to a playoff team, but I don't think that's a championship team. The guys who would really make a difference in free agency, and I'm talking about a guy like Kawhi, a guy like Kevin Durant, a guy like Klay Thompson, a guy like Kyrie Irving, all of those guys have rings. They don't need to come play with LeBron to help themselves be validated, which is what Kevin Love felt like he had to do. And that's not anybody's fault. That's just the circumstances of this particular class. The other thing is there's other attractive alternatives out there. Both New York teams have open space. The Clippers have open space. The Mavericks have open space, and they have a pretty interesting future. I think Atlanta is going to get at least meetings with free agents. It's a bad market to play in. Even if you were at the absolute top of your game and everybody wanted to play with you, which is not the case for LeBron on either count, it's a tough market. And because the Lakers have really put all of their eggs into the free agent basket, they have not developed their young players into stars. They have not been able to execute trades that have upgraded their roster. They do have a high draft pick this year, but it may be outside the zone of where they can get a difference maker. Because they have put all of their eggs into landing the big fish in free agency, it applies the pressure to do it that way. And if they don't get it, all of a sudden now it's back to the drawing board. And so because it's Los Angeles, because it's the Lakers, they have a fighting chance. They have a better chance than almost anybody else when all things are equal. But this year, not all things are equal.
Well, clearly the move to L.A. was calculated with basketball and other interests in mind. But could you foresee any scenario where the Lakers strike out this year, they can't make an Anthony Davis trade, they don't attract a free agent, and there is a world in which LeBron James ends up being someone who joins a different group and does not finish his contract with the Lakers?
Impossible to look that far in advance. I think the real question is what the Lakers' plan that they have is if they miss on their main free agents. Will they try to do something like sign a short-term stopgap? Like, will they chase a guy like DeMarcus Cousins? Or will they have a plan? Will they go out and sign shooting? Like, for example, I think a guy that makes a ton of sense for them is Seth Curry. Seth Curry is a free agent, unrestricted, who's an excellent shooting off-the-ball guard, who's perfect to play alongside LeBron. I'd love to know how many conversations the Lakers have had about Seth Curry or players like him. I'd like to know where on their free agent board, because if it were me, if I were the Lakers, I would be calling Seth Curry on July 1st. Maybe not my first call, but he was sure it would hell be on the list. And that's the kind of management I would like to see from the Lakers. But it's, again, they have constructed their entire team to only chase the big fish. And, like, look, what do you need, a baseball analogy? When you swing for the fence, what happens? A lot of times you miss and you strike out.